The amount of stuff that you keep from someone who's passed away in no way represents how much you love them. So people flip over into being burdened by all of it. So what they're actually doing is kind of diluting the connection because they have this burden of all this stuff that they resent, or they're paying for the storage unit. So their memory about the person kind of goes into that place. And, you know, I think that when it comes with guilt, you know, I've got to keep this. My mom loved it. It can easily go into shame. If I get rid of it, then I'm a bad child.
That was Tracy McCubbin, and this is Mentally Flexible. Welcome to Mentally Flexible, where we have meaningful conversations to help you build mental flexibility. I'm Tom Parks. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and in each episode, I'll be talking to people who inspire me most on topics related to psychology, mental health, and creativity. My hope is that through these conversations, you'll better understand yourself, others, and the world around you. Thanks for being here, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. My guest today is Tracy McCubbin. She's the author of the book Making Space, Clutter Free, and is a regularly featured expert in the media, including in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and Goop. I was interested in speaking with Tracy because there is no doubt that our inner and outer worlds are interconnected, so the way we relate to our homes can teach us a lot about our psychology and mental health. Tracy's work goes deeper than just how to simply organize your home. She helps people understand what she calls the emotional clutter blocks that drive our behaviors. In this episode, we explore the 7 different types of emotional clutter blocks, how they relate to concepts like values, identity, and shame, how intergenerational family dynamics play a role, understanding the global impact of consumption, and the potential for overcorrecting and becoming excessively orderly. I really love this conversation with Tracy. As you can tell, she is really passionate about her work. I wanted to release this episode now since many of us will have time off for the holidays and leading into the new year, making it a great time to reflect on how some of these emotional clutter blocks may be playing a role in our lives. And thank you all so much for your support with this podcast. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you'd like to support the show, please subscribe and leave a review. And shoot me a follow on Instagram at Mentally Flexible to get some bonus content. All right, well, thanks again for being here, everyone. And I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tracy McCubbin. So much for doing this. I'm really looking forward to speaking with you.
Thanks for having me, Thomas. I'm super. And you go by Thomas, not Tom?
You could just Thomas. It's whatever you want.
Okay.
One of the reasons why I was excited to talk to you is because over the years in my own life and with clients, I've realized how interconnected our inner and outer worlds are and our sense of well-being. So it's cool that you seem to approach decluttering from a very holistic lens where it's more about what's going on emotionally too, rather than just what things look like physically. So yeah, I'm really interested in your work.
Oh, great. Yeah. There's a huge crossover. I sort of, when I started my business 14 years ago now, I pretty early on just was able to draw connections. And someone had once said to me years and years ago, this phrase, the root of the thing is never the thing itself. Mm-hmm. And I really see that, like, you know, clutter is never about the clutter. It's never about the stuff. It's about, you know, shopping because you feel lonely, or, you know, having a dysfunctional relationship. So you literally keep a wall of stuff between you and your partner. You know, you're holding on to memories of the past, that it really reveals so much about your internal emotional life.
Yeah, one of the lenses I like looking at the world through is with the Chinese philosophy symbol of the yin yang and the opposing energies. And one of the ways I think about that are the energies of order and chaos. And it seems like what you do, is it fair to say, or help people whose lives have fallen off balance into the chaos side and bring them into more balance with some order?
Exactly. And And the really neat thing, and one of the things that I love about what I do, is that there's not one prescribed definition of order.
Yeah.
You know, what's order for, and I do think this is a gift of mine, that I have the ability to sort of regulate what people need. So what's order for one person isn't necessarily order for another. And I think so much of the messaging right now, especially, I'm going to get, you know, this is where I get on my soapbox, on social media, is that things, your home needs to look one way, right? Okay. That everything needs to be color coordinated, and it needs to be labeled, and it needs to look like Pinterest or Instagram. And it makes people feel really bad. And if that's not how you want to live, you're still a fantastic person. You know, I want you to feel beautiful in your own home. I want you to feel comfortable in your own home. I want you to feel relaxed in your own home, whatever that looks like to you. And so many people in my space are like, oh, it has to be this way. It has to look this way. And I just think it sets us up for comparison, and we feel bad enough already. Like, let's not feel worse.
Yeah, totally. And that touches on something I want to get to later on in the interview, around how sometimes we can overcorrect and go too far into the order side. And,
okay, yeah, that's right. We can.
So where I wanted to start is, first of all, thanks for sending me a book. I really loved it, and going to be applying a lot of this to my own life, because there is a lot that resonated for me personally. You start out early in the book talking about the emotional clutter blocks, the idea of an emotional clutter block. So why don't we start there and then maybe unpack what some of those different ones are?
Yeah. So at its simplest form, a clutter block is a story that we've written about our stuff, about why we can't possibly let it go, right? Mm. You know, stuff comes to us with no meaning. It's just an object, and we imbue all the meaning on it, right? We pour everything, you know, clothes that don't fit, you know, fat pants are the perfect example. Like if I get into my skinny pants, you know, I have my fat pants and I have my skinny pants. And if I get into my skinny pants, my life will be perfect. So we've given so much power to these pair of pants, right? So because of that, we're not going to let it go, because it's a fantasy. Right. We fantasize that if we get into that size pants, our life will be perfect. So I can't possibly let go of that pair of pants that I will never get into. I am of a certain age where my body has changed. It's just changed. It's not going to go back to how it was. And it's pretty great how it is, but I will never be able to fit in some things that I fit into before. It's just not physiologically possible. So to hang on to this fantasy of what it was just is going to make me feel bad. So it's that story that I've written, that why I can't let things go. And in working with clients for 14 years now, I did my Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours, right? You know, 10,000 hours makes you an expert. And I was like, I've lapped that like three times. So I found that everyone had these similar clutter blocks. There were seven of them, and they just kept coming up. And I was like, this is a thing. So really early on, I started identifying them and pointing them out to people, and they just resonated. So through that, that's what the book Making Space Clutter Free was written about, to let people access and see that this is something I have control over, you know? So it's been really powerful.
That's great. I mean, that's something that is a big part of what I do therapeutically with people, is to be able to identify what these stories are that drive certain behaviors or patterns in our lives. And there's a lot of power that comes from simply that ability to kind of step back and notice and give a name to something that is happening.
We're humans. We're meaning making machines, right?
Yeah.
We're like, oh, rain on your wedding day. You know, that means this, a bird poops on you, that means good luck. You know, we try and make meaning out of everything. So we try and make meaning out of our stuff.
Yeah.
And at the core, what I always tell people when I work with them in person and the readers of the book is, I'm not telling you to get rid of everything. I'm not a minimalist in my own life. If you want to live that way, fantastic. I will help you get there. If you don't, it's not about getting rid of everything. It's about acknowledging and being accountable and seeing how the stuff that you do have, is it helping you or is it hurting you? Mm. You know, do you own your stuff or does your stuff own you?
Mm. Yeah, that's another overlap in the way I work with people is the language you use there of like helpful versus unhelpful, rather than going looking at it through a lens of right or wrong or good, bad, or what things should be. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's always, you know, sessions with me, I'll start like, what's your vision? You know, and some people it's, you know, I want to stop paying, you know, $300 a month for this storage space. Okay. And then we do a little deeper work. All right. If you weren't spending that $300 a month, what would you do with that money? Well, I'd pay down my student loan. Great. That's a really actionable goal, right? That's a positive. That is a something that we can all, you know, work towards. So when you're working, when you're starting your decluttering process, I want you to have a goal while you're doing it, not just you're a bad, messy person. You know, it's like, I want to clear out my guest room because I want to use it as an Airbnb, or I want my grandkids to come visit, or, you know, that there's a helpful goal is attached, a positive outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And that touches on values, which are a big part of what I do as well. This is cool.
Exactly. What are your values? What are important to you? Because yeah. I'll tell you this, I worked with a lot of people, a lot of famous people, a lot of rich people. More stuff is not a value.
Mm.
It's a circumstance, but it's not a value.
Yeah, totally. So if we were to, could we explore a little bit the seven different kinds of emotional clutter blocks? Yeah. I found it really fascinating.
Yeah. Ooh, I want to, well, we'll chat a little bit more and I'll see if I can guess what your clutter block is.
I figured it out while reading your book.
Everybody's got one. I'm a number three. I'm clutter block number three. I'll just jump in the middle, which is avoiding my stuff. Clutter people with clutter block three, we don't like to open our mail. We don't like to read our emails. We're, oh, interesting. I would have thought you might have been a the stuff I keep paying for, but you know.
For context for listeners, I was pointing to myself as she was an avoider.
And the interesting thing about clutter block number three, avoiding my stuff, is it tends to go hand in hand with very successful people. People who are successful, and that's such a tricky, loaded word, but people who are accomplished in their work or work hard or are busy at work, they tend to push their personal stuff aside. So I'm, you know, I used to be really bad. And then I realized as I got older that things like taxes always catch up with you. Bills always catch up with you. So
student loans
always catch up with you. So pull your, you know, put your big girl pants on and open your mail. So
describe a little bit more about what the type number three is here.
So that's, you know, it's avoiding my stuff. It's really about the business of being a grown-up, right? We got to pay taxes. We got to pay bills. You know, if you're choosing to live in society, they're just, you make an agreement and you've got to keep your end of the bargain up. And people who avoid it think that it's going to go away. But what we all know is it does not go away. In fact, it gets worse. And it's, I always liken it to difficult conversations. I read a book once about how to have difficult conversations, and they always, and they said, and this was so, I found this so to be so true that, the hardest part is starting the conversation. Once it gets going, you're in it and it's emotional, but it's that like making that phone call you don't want to make, or, you know, and it's the same thing with opening that mail. Like just, it's going to be bad. Let's acknowledge you. Push some stuff aside. You're going to have to pay a dumbass tax and, you know, do it. So,
I want to share with you a little anecdote from this morning, actually related to number three here. I was going over the different types again this morning. And as I got to number three, I looked over at this, we have this bamboo plant shelf table in our living room that we put plants on. And a few days ago, it kind of got loose and knocked the plants over. And so it's been like half broken with the pots on the ground for like 3 days now. And I've just been keep telling myself I got to do that when I have more time, as I was reading this part about being the avoider. And then I got up and fixed it, and it took like a minute and a half.
Yeah, I know that. I know. And that's the thing. The great thing about the clutter blocks is that the other side of them is that, like, avoiding your stuff, when you actually dive in, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Like, yeah. I get it done. Like, I got it done. That wasn't so horrible. So, that's a big one. You know, we go, so there's seven of them. And we start in the middle, but clutter block number one is my stuff keeps me stuck in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's a really powerful one. That's, fat pants, fat and skinny pants. That keeps you stuck, you know, clothes you can't fit into anymore. Memories of your childhood, you know, parents whose kids have grown and their and the kids' rooms are shrines to their children. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of sentimental, not too sentimental. I'm not saying to wipe away memories. I believe our history is so important. I believe it, everything. But I also feel like if there's too much of the past, you're telling yourself that your best days are behind you. Mm. That you're not looking forward, you know, that those were your glory days and you don't have anything coming in front of you. So it's an interesting balance. And especially this one is so key if you have trauma in your past. Mm. You know, a lot of people, I was working with someone who had a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse backwards. And she had a lot of memento-y things, gifts that this person had given her that just constantly would re-trigger her and put her back in the trauma. And she got bad, really, really bad. And she got rid of everything except the card. There were some cards. She had ended up in the hospital, burned the cards that the doctors and nurses had sent her, because that reminded her that she had overcome it. All the other stuff went away. So, you know, it's that journey of what's the part of the past that's going to know what I've built myself to be, and what's the part that's holding me down?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great example too, of how our external world and our internal world, they're so connected. That there's things in our environment that are having an impact on our minds and our emotions. We might not even realize it.
I deal a lot with people, help people post-divorce. And sort of the big question always comes up, like, we have all this, the wedding album, like, what do I do? You know, and especially if it's been a traumatic divorce, and I'm like, they're like, well, I want to remember. And I'm like, I think you're going to remember that you were married to that person. Like, can you just keep one photo, you know, maybe the photo of your parents. So I think that's the interesting lens to look at it through. Are these mementos of the past helping me, or are they hurting me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Cool.
Number two, clutter block number two, and this one has been rearing its ugly head during the pandemic, is my stuff tells me who I am. Mm. This is my shoppers. These are people who define themselves by what they own and what they buy. Now, this one has an interesting, it can go from people who buy very high-end stuff, lots of, you know, tech equipment, got to have the newest phone, designer labels, I got to have the best, you know, camera, down to the people who bargain hunt. It's a different end of the same teeter-totter. And this is really defining yourself by what you buy. I found a great deal, or, you know, I have this fancy purse. And I just, look, I'm driving around town. I see everybody's front porches. I see all those Amazon boxes. I know y'all are shopping during this. So, you know, is it helping? Is it making the pandemic easier? I don't think so. I just got a text from a client, and I was saying how busy we were. And she goes, oh, well, you're going to be even busier when this is over, because we all rebought the stuff you made us get rid of in the first place. So, you know, I think that the emptiness, and I, you know, the interesting thing about this clutter block, my stuff tells me who I am. I really think the root of it is people want a human connection. You know, before the pandemic, and hopefully soon, you know, it's about being able to go into a store and chat with someone, and, you know, someone sells you something and you have this interaction, and, and I just, you know, this one's a big one. This one's really, really a big one. And I've been doing a bunch of reading too about shopping addiction and how it's just so intertwined with your sense of self or lack thereof.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. That's a good point. If you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of human connection, or maybe a lot of things that don't have a lot of activities that make you feel alive and like you're having fun, going out shopping and seeing people and connecting with people and going to the mall for a day, that's meeting a lot of needs that you have, but then it can lead to your life being set up in an unhelpful way.
Well, I always call it the make work of clutter. Right? The clutter keeps you busy. You know, you're not lonely. I'm rearranging my closet. I'm returning things at the mall. I'm doing my Zappos boxes. Look, and this clutter block is interesting because the odds are stacked against you. Like, it's no coincidence that the original designers of the Amazon website used to design slot machines. Mm. Like, it's that whole process of I order something, I forget I order it, a present shows up for me the next day, right? You're like, ding, 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 dopamine. That's the dopamine one, right? The one that the little hit. Is it the serotonin? Yeah. It's the dopamine, right? I always mix it up, right? So it's this process of you order, ping, put in your thing. Next day, a package gets dropped off. You got a present, right? So we associate it with a little hit of dopamine. And then it's not enough. So you got to get more and you got to get more. And we're just inundated by, buy. So this one's a tough one. And this one, I always want people to understand that as much as they can be accountable for their own actions, the capitalistic society that we live in is pushing us really hard to buy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to take personal responsibility, but we also have to be mindful in the reality of the world that we live in and how lots of people are getting paid a lot of money to try to get these things to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember in college, like the intro to advertising or class that I took where you learned about, they would put the subliminal messages in the movie theater ads, right? They'd put the little something, and I mean, it's still happening. So yes, we need to be accountable, but we also have to understand. And that's why I want people to acknowledge that they're buying and why they're buying. I mean, I had an episode on Cyber Monday. I don't know what, I do exactly know what happened, but I bought new sheets and I bought new comforters and I bought new towels. And I was like, well, this brand never goes on sale. And I was like, oh, right. I feel absolutely out of control. Like, this whole thing has me so, I haven't seen my family. I haven't seen my nieces and nephews. Like, I just was like, I'm going to make my home as cozy as possible. And so it was a moment of like, oh, this is why I did this. And I could understand it.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So that was number two. And then we covered number three. That's the avoider.
Yeah. Number four is my fantasy stuff for my fantasy life. Mm. This is one of my favorites. This is, the joke I always tell about this one is I'll go into somebody's bedroom and they'll have a giant treadmill in the middle of the bedroom that they've got to walk around. And I'm like, do you use this? And they're like, oh, I use it every day. And I'm like, great. And they're like, to hang my clothes on. So it's, it's the stuff that we buy thinking we're going to do the thing, right? I'm going to buy all the yarn and the needles and I'm going to become a knitter. I'm going to buy those funny barefoot shoes and I'm going to kind of become a distance runner. You know, don't buy the stuff to do the thing. Buying the stuff is never going to motivate you to do the thing. Start to do the thing. And then, and you fantasize about it. I see this a lot. This is an interesting one. I see this a lot with my older gentlemen who keep tools, and they it's a little stuck in the past and my fantasy stuff, I used to fix my car and I used to get up on a ladder and fix the roof, I mean, maybe someday I'm going to do it again. Maybe not so much on a ladder. Mm. So, I think that the interesting thing about clutter is, and stuff, our lives change, right? When we're, what we needed when we were 16 to 20, then when you're young and you're starting your first house and maybe you're partnering up and maybe having kids, maybe not having kids, kids getting older, you know, hosting the holidays, like our life is a pattern. And I really think, some of the most interesting parts of my work is working with people who are entering into their third chapter and acknowledging that their life is really different and processing that, you know, yeah. It's really beautiful. Look, it's going to happen to all of us, and pretending it's not, I think really, you know, you cheat yourself out of an experience.
Yeah. 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 This one's interesting. I think I got a little bit of this one, and it's probably important to say as we go through these that you can overlap on these, and maybe you have a main one, but you might touch different ones too.
Yeah. Right? And also as your life goes on, you know, you may not have one and then something could happen to you or your circumstances change, that it's really, you know, it's really fluid. I work a lot with people who are downsizing from lifelong homes or after someone's passed away. And the clutter blocks in that scenario, especially with the whole family, are completely different than, say, a family with young kids. So, you know, you can definitely see it come and go. Yeah, fantasy stuff for my fantasy life.
So this would this be me when I'll have some new idea? I'd be like, oh, I want to get into cooking more. And my mind instantly wants to go to, like, collect a bunch of stuff for cooking before actually even building the skills.
That is the best example of this, because you know what you need to cook? A knife and a pot. Like, you can pretty much cook anything with a knife and a pot, but you're like, I have to buy the mushroom scrubber, and I have to buy the sous vide thing, and I have to. And you're like, nope. Humans have been cooking with fire and a flint for a long time. So that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
And grow, you know, in the great, I joke with people, but if there's something like that, that you're stepping into, guess what? Your neighbor or your best friend probably bought it all, so you can borrow it from them. Like, let me try a sous vide. So,
yeah, with that one, it's almost just about, at least in my experience, it's the, like, that short-term burst of excitement of the idea of that being a part of your life or being that person who's a good cook just, like, floods your system. And then you just, like,
you fantasize about who you are, right? I want to be this. And that always comes back to, you know, being happy with who you are. Yeah. I was talking to someone, I have a Facebook Live group, but any of the listeners, if they want to come join, it's a private Facebook group. I go live every Wednesday night. It's a lot of fun and really great people. So if anybody wants to, Tracy McCubbin over at the Facebook, as my mom calls it. But I had a woman who was wrestling with she had all these crafting kits. People had given her, and she didn't do them, but she felt guilty giving them away. And I said, well, let's talk that through. And she said, I just feel like I should be a person who's crafting. And I know her, I've gotten to know her quite well. And I said, well, let's walk this back a little bit. So you have a full-time job. You wrote a book. You are doing a ton of volunteer work around the ICE detention centers and getting supplies there and, you know, trying to change policy. So you're doing a lot of pretty amazing stuff. She's like, I know, I just feel bad about myself that I'm not a crafter. I was like, okay. And everyone chimed in like, she's such a lovely person. They're like, you're so amazing. Like, you don't need to be a crafter to be a great person. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so we fantasize that this thing we take on and all the stuff that comes with us is somehow going to make us be a better person.
Yeah. 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 I love that one.
Right. I wish I was something else. How about be who you are? You're great. You know, I meet so many amazing people. Like, in my job, I'm so lucky. They're so amazing. And I'm like, yeah, you're amazing. With all that stuff could go away. You could be standing naked in an empty room and you would be just as amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Yes. So that was what was that? That was five.
Four. Fantasy stuff for my fantasy life. Okay. Number five, this is one of my favorites. I'm not worth my good stuff.
Mm.
This is clothes with tags on it. We don't wear them because we're saving them for a special occasion. We don't use our china. We don't use our silver. We don't set a nice table for ourselves. You know, this is really about self-worth, like self-worth and mortality. We don't know if we get tomorrow, especially right now. So guess what? Use it today. Heat up the pizza and put it on your nice china. Why not? You know, we don't live the Downton Abbey life anymore. So use your nice stuff. Every day is worth celebrating. Every day is worth celebrating. You woke up today. You took a breath today. There's a lot of people that can't say that. So, you know, pour your coffee in your really pretty teacup. You know, wear that nice shirt just because you're walking the dog.
Mm. Yeah. So where do you see this manifesting most in people's homes? I see the china example, like good silverware.
Yeah. Clothes, definitely. I see it also in gifts that people give other people. So you get a really nice gift from someone. You're like, oh, I can't burn that candle. It was super expensive. Or I'm waiting for a special occasion. Mm. I'm a big celebrator in the sense of not so much the regular holidays, but, you know, I like to make a nice meal if and when friends can visit again. Or, you know, I think that the chance, especially now that we haven't been able to see each other, that when we get to start to see each other again, I think it's worth celebrating. So if that stuff, if you have things that are beautiful to you, use them.
Mm, yeah, maybe a nice bottle of wine that you've just been holding on to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. One of my things that my Facebook group does that's so cute to me is they'll post pictures of themselves having like their cup of afternoon tea in their grandma's china with a little cookie. Mm. And they'll just pour himself. It's so great, you know? So use it. And especially, you know, this is also like sort of equipment that people buy, like, you know, bust out your nice skis, like to just use the good stuff,
Oh yeah. 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 I'll notice that impulse within myself too, that I don't think I give into it as much, but I'll notice even I'll buy like bought a nice pair of hiking shoes recently. And then I remembered it was like a muddy day. The first day I was going to wear them, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't wear them out. I'm like, that's what you got them for.
Exactly. And this illuminates something. This leads into something great. At the end of the day, most of the objects we own are actually just tools.
Yeah.
Hiking boots are just tools to do something that you love to do, right? Mm-hmm. China is just something to eat off of. Furniture is just something you sleep on. It's a tool to help your life.
Yeah.
So use the good tools.
Yeah. I love that. I think another place that manifests, I'm not rich enough, so it can't happen to me, but with musicians, I feel like people will have like their nice guitars that they spent a lot of money on, or nice music equipment, but they won't use it because that's the stuff they spend a lot of money on.
I have a lot of musician clients, interestingly. And one of the things that I see at a certain point, it's really amazing to see them use all their stuff. It's really, I helped a client who had a gorgeous guitar collection. And, you know, we had a lot of conversations. He was like, about these 20 I play, these, you know, but it's, yeah, play the beautiful stuff. Especially, that's a great example too, because musical instruments are meant to be played. So if they're just sitting there.
Okay. So that was five.
Right. So number six, clutter block number six. We're going to take a deep breath. This one's a powerful one. This is trapped with other people's stuff.
Mm.
So the lighter version of this is kids who have moved out and they're storing their stuff at your house. You know, you let a friend, oh, you can put these boxes and this furniture in my garage. And then they move away and it's been there for 10 years. But the really heavy, intense one is when someone has passed away.
Yes.
So this is, I deal with this all the time. So this is everything from people having storage units that they're paying for furniture that they'll never use, to their garage full of it. And, you know, this idea, and I said this the other day, you know, I can't let go of it. It was my mom's, and I still, you know, it's still so hard that she's passed. And I said, here's the thing. You don't want the stuff. You want the connection. You want your mom.
Yeah.
That's what you want. So you got to sit with the grief, and you got to know that the stuff isn't, you can have the memories, you can have everything without all of the stuff. I famously stole this from Dr. Phil, but the amount of stuff that you keep from someone who's passed away in no way represents how much you love them.
Yeah.
So people flip over into being burdened by all of it. So what they're actually doing is kind of diluting the connection, because they have this burden of all this stuff that they resent, or they're paying for the storage unit. So their memory about the person kind of goes into that place.
Yeah. A lot of this must be fueled by guilt, right? Like a sense of obligation.
Yeah. And this talk about, I've been reading a lot about like ancestral trauma. I don't know if that's the right term, but sort of
intergenerational
trauma and things that are passed down. And so in this weird way, it's intergenerational clutter, you know, that you've been, this is worth a lot. You know, do not get me, I have to take a moment. Everybody needs to turn off Storage Wars. They need to turn off Antique Roadshow. Like, people, just because it's old does not mean it's worth a lot of money. Okay.
Yeah.
I need to underscore that. So you get this, you know, story that this thing was, you know, worth a lot of money at one point, or could be worth a lot of money. And, you know, nobody knows. Stuff's worth what someone's going to pay you for today.
Yeah.
Now, it may have a different value. It may be emotionally valuable. It may be. So, you know, I just really invite people to do, is this stuff helping you? Is it making you happy? Is it costing you? Is it filling your home in a way that you want? If not, can you let it go? This was a great story. I got an SOS text from a client who had to move her mom very quickly into assisted living, very quickly. And she lives across the country. So she flew for a weekend, and she's got kids and a job and a life, and was like, I, you know, I've got this house full of my mom's furniture. I get, you know, nobody's going to buy it. It's outdated. It's nice. It's good wood, you know, it's quality furniture. Like, I just can't have the trash hauler come. And I said, well, you know what? She's like, what do I do? And I said, you know what? Try. That's where she's from. It was her hometown. I said, put a post up on Facebook. So she put a post up on Facebook about what she had, and, you know, a cousin's daughter, or, you know, some 20 year old generation was moving into their first apartment. So a bunch of kids showed up in a U-Haul, took all this free furniture, and started their new life.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, the other people's stuff that you don't really need and feel obligated to hold on to could actually be of value to other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And also this trapped with other people's stuff, we also have to be really aware of what we are putting on this. So I had a conversation with a woman who had three sons, and they were all married, and she had china that she loved, but none of her daughter-in-laws wanted her china. They were like, we have our own china. We love our china. We got it for our wedding. She was so mad at everyone. She cut off communication from them. She was like, this is important to me. This is nice stuff. They need to take it. And I was like, okay, we got to unpack this. Right? Like, you're willing to cut off communication because they don't want your stuff. Like, don't you want to have dinner with them? Like, you know, cause they don't, she had made it so important that it was overtaking the whole relationship. So a lot of times, especially when someone passes or moves along, they kind of pass that story along with it. This is important to me. You have to keep it. And yeah. especially if someone's had a clutter problem and they pass, people are like, well, they spend so much time managing their stuff and so much money. And I always say, like, you don't have to keep repeating their mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this goes back to the idea of the relationship between our inner and outer worlds. Everything you just said could be replaced with internal things that get passed on and feel like you kind of have to hold on to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Brené Brown says, guilt is I did a bad thing. Shame is I am a bad person. And, you know, I think that when it comes with guilt, you know, I've got to keep this. My mom loved it. It can easily go into shame. If I get rid of it, then I'm a bad child.
Yeah.
So it's really loaded. And I'm seeing a crescendo because we have too much stuff in the world. You know, people are getting married later, not getting married, choosing not to buy. People are living longer. And so it's like, you know, I get a call easily once a week where someone's like, I'm moving. I've lived in my house for my 40 years. My kids, my grandkids don't want any of it. I'm like, nope, they don't want any of it. So that also, I want people to start informing their buying now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
I know.
That's number six. So then we got one more.
Yeah, one more. The last one is the stuff I keep paying for. This is a good one to wrap up on. This is, I can't possibly get rid of it. I paid so much money for it. But if you're not using it, it doesn't matter what you paid for it. And sometimes this one comes down to, you know, you made a mistake. You made a bad purchase. You spent a lot of money. Okay. You're not a bad person. You're not, you know, this idea that you're going to go through your whole life without making a mistake, it's not going to happen.
This can also be, at least in my own experience, it's not even just that we've spent a lot of money, but someone else did. Like I have a digital camera that I got as a gift for Christmas a few years ago that cost a pretty good amount of money, but now the phone in my pocket is way better than it. And it's still sitting in my closet because of this.
And that's a great example. We have no, like I say this on a daily basis. It's not your fault. Technology moves at the speed of light. My grandma, her whole life, and supported herself with it, had one typewriter. She had one typewriter. She was a secretary. She did outside, like writing church newsletters for money. One typewriter. I think I'm on my 12th computer. Easy. That's not even including my phones, which are computers in my pocket. Yes. So we have no control, and talk about, you know, planned obsolescence, right? This stuff is designed to not be useful in a year or two.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very relevant one in the modern world now and going to keep happening because everything is going to just keep getting more advanced. And if you have a need to upgrade your technology, there's always going to be this trail of stuff that you paid a lot of money for at one point.
And think about this, the trail of technology. When you throw something away, where's away?
True.
Where does That's it go? I mean, I deal with e-waste on a daily basis. We drive it to something and, you know, I mean, people have got to be accountable for where is that stuff getting thrown away to.
Excellent point. And a lot of times that ends up in other parts of the world where it causes a lot of problems for people that have to live there.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, that opens up also the conversation of fast fashion, right? Cheap clothes. You know, do a little bit of research of where that all comes from. And you're going to think twice about buying that $5 t-shirt from the Gap when you realize it was made in Vietnam by child labor and then put on a boat and then brought here. And then you use the excuse. This is a new excuse that everybody's on board with. It's like, well, if I don't like, you know, I'll buy it, but if I don't like it, I can just donate it. It's like, so you're buying it to dispose of it? Like, we got to change that thinking pronto.
Yeah, that's a really good point around how tapping into somebody's values, ethical values, could be used to help this whole process.
Exactly. Exactly. And look, it's challenging because on the other side of it, I work with people who I call my eco warriors, right? Who are so trying to recycle and want to do the right thing. And then by getting wrapped around that, they don't want anything to go in the landfill. So they turn their house into a landfill. That one's about backing it up and really thinking about what you're buying, right?
Yeah. So that's a really nice segue into something I wanted to talk about here, where, you know, in this book and everything we're talking about, seems like you're helping people who have fallen really out of balance on the chaos side and bringing them over into a more balance of order in their life. I can't help but think, though, when I see people who have, when I see pictures of people's cabinets or home that are perfectly organized, I have to imagine in some of those cases underneath that, there can be just as much suffering in someone's rigidity for perfection and an overly orderly. Have you noticed that people can swing to the other side?
And here's this is a great question. So here's what people need to understand about a very, very organized life. Like, you know, we're talking bins that are labeled and everything. It's very time consuming. Yeah. It takes a lot of time and a lot of pressure. If you want to live like that, I get it. I lean towards that way, but you have to understand the time commitment that goes in. And then you also have to be okay when it gets out of balance. You know, I'm very clearly, for me and a lot of people I work with, when everything gets wacky, I do a little bit of organizing and I feel better. I grew up in a very chaotic childhood. I just know that when I can make order out of chaos, I feel better. I have to watch it because it can get, you know, if I find myself waking up at 2 a.m. to organize my closet, you know, something bigger is going on, right? Something bigger. I got to like call my therapist and figure out what all this is. So it can go the other way.
Yeah.
You know, and also life is messy. Life doesn't match. That's okay. You know, but I really see this pressure to, you know, it's got to be order and it has to be this way. And that's for me is the book doesn't, I give you work plans and how to work through your house, but I don't tell you how to do it. I don't think it's your house. I'm not probably not ever going to come over. I want you to be happy in it. I want you to feel calm. You know, so balance it out. It's all balance.
Yes.
Really,
yes.
It's all balance.
So how would someone know if their space is shifting out of balance into that chaos? Like, what are some ways to gauge that in your day-to-day life?
Fantastic. So a couple ways that I tell people to notice if it's their house isn't working is, are there rooms in your house you just don't go into because they just get you too stressed out? Can you neaten up or tidy up a room in 20 minutes? Can you go into, you know, it feels a little out of control, but in 20 minutes you can get everything back. And I'm not talking about doing the laundry, you know, you can get laundry in the laundry basket. Can you neaten up your room in a room in 20 minutes? Do you feel like your stuff owns you instead of you owning your stuff? So do you feel like you're beholden to your stuff? Are you moving it around? Do you have to move papers to sit down and eat your dinner at your dinner table? Is there stuff getting in the way of using rooms as they were intended to be? So is your kitchen full of your bills because your desk is too messy because your bills can't go on your desk, right? That's the kind of stuff, you know, can you eat at your dinner table or is it full of packages to return? Like just do a walk through your house and go, oh, this area isn't working. This stuff doesn't belong here. And that's like a really good litmus test for people.
Yeah.
Is it working?
Can I use this room for what it is intended to be used for?
Exactly. Can I park my car in the garage?
Yeah.
P.S. Only 25% of Americans can park their cars in their garage. 25%.
Yeah.
You know, we put our...
I don't even want to know the statistics on storage units. That's
it's a $1 billion industry. Yeah. And I will tell you, till I'm blue in the face, I have never never been in a storage unit, and I have been in thousands of them, that the stuff inside the storage unit is worth as much as they paid to store it.
Haven't you seen Storage Wars?
I live it. I mean, you know, it's just, I've been there where people have done the math, where they rolled open the door and they do it and they do the math of what they've spent. $10,000, $20,000. And they like, it brings people to their knees.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's, you know, that's a great thing about like, how do you know if your stuff is out of control? Look at the cost. What's the monetary cost of your stuff? Are you paying to store it? Are you, you know, that, what's it costing you? What's it emotionally costing you? Can you not have somebody come and visit and stay in your guest room because that's become a storage depot? What's the cost to, what's the cost to your stress? You know, do you walk in your house and feel calm, or do you walk in your house and feel like it's a to-do list? Like your throat tightens up and you're like, oh, I have to deal with that. I mean, your table that fell apart was a perfect example. I'm sure every time in the last couple of days when you walk past, you're like, I have to deal with that. I have to deal with that. And then you dealt with it and it felt great.
Yes. Yeah. Like, oh. I like that. I like that last point you said there, to use your sort of your intuitive mind to know if a room makes you calm or a room makes you stressed out.
And there are some physiological responses. Does your throat tighten up? Do you get a pit in your stomach? Do you feel a weight on your chest? Those are right responses to stress. So just pay attention to that. Do you walk into a room and feel your throat tighten a little, like, oh, I got to deal with this?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So let's see how it would be a good way to end here. So let's say somebody realizes that their life is off balance towards that chaos side and they want to begin this process. Where would you suggest they start?
I would suggest that they buy my book, Making Space Clutter-Free, the last book on decluttering you'll ever need. It's available in Kindle. I read the audiobook. It's great. I just checked, it's in stock with bookshop.org, which is the clearinghouse for all the independent bookstores. So it's a great place to start. Come visit me over at my Facebook group. This is Tracy McCubbin on Facebook, and then I'm Tracy McCubbin on Instagram. So social media, I'm pretty active. I think she's a bit of a cruel mistress, but that's a whole different podcast. But yeah, the book is a great place to start. It's really, really great place to start.
Yeah, I'll second that. Tracy sent me a book, and I think I mentioned earlier, I read it. And it is really great. So I'm going to use it for my own life.
Fantastic. It's great because it has an emotional component to it. And then it's got some work plans. So it's really like, okay, now I've realized this stuff and this is how I can implement it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking this time today to speak with me.
Thank you, Thomas. It was so fun. I can't wait to hear this. I'm excited to meet a whole new group of people who are interested in their mental wellness, you know, that people are looking at a holistic approach. I think that the more things we can do to help ourselves, the happier we can all be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I truly do believe, like we started, that the space you live in affects your mental health. And, you know, you could start by addressing what's going on internally and see how that has reverberations externally, but you could also start by just cleaning your room and see the impact that has internally.
My niece deals with some depression, and she calls it she knows when things are bad, when she stops cleaning her room, and she calls it her depression den.
Yeah.
And so she'll call me up and she goes, it's bad. And I go, okay, what are you going to do? And she's like, I'm opening the windows and I'm going to do my laundry. And I'm like, that's a win. That's great.
Excellent. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Thomas.
Big thank you to Tracy for this interview. And a thank you to you all for listening to Mentally Flexible. I'll see you back here next time. Peace.
It's got me out of my mind. It's got me seeing trees breathe. It's got me learning how heaven and hell are both inside of me. It's got me feeling the love that I bottled so deep, when the entire world kept feeding on my greed. know. I'll never know. But I can close my eyes, take a deep breath, and try to open my soul. Oh yes, I know. I'll never know. But I can close my eyes, take a deep breath, and try to open my soul. Oh yes, I know. I'll never know. But I can close my eyes, take a deep breath, and try to open my soul.